Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey Geekscapists, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan London, your host. And if this is your first Geekscape, please strap yourselves in for some pop culture talk. Everything pop culture worthy that you can fit under your little noggin. The hood of your noggin. It's a little rough this morning, it's because I'm trying out the Instagram Live thing as well as we record. Just seeing if it'll work. Seeing if we can get some Instagram people to watch as well while we do the live on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. But if this is your first Geekscape, you're in for a treat. We're going to be talking Aquaman and the Lost City. This is a movie I saw about 2 weeks ago when it came out, and I was in South Carolina with Heidi's family for the Christmas vacation, and just didn't do a Geekscape with you guys. I didn't do a remote Geekscape, and I apologize because I know y'all were like, but what does he think of Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom? Well, I'm glad you waited. That being said, if you haven't seen it yet, you had 2 weeks to watch it. If you haven't seen it yet, we're going to talk spoilers. I'm not joined by Ian Kerner this time. Ian's got a lot on his plate right now. Props up to my guy, Ian. Love you, man. But Christian Blatt from the Marvel Movie Talk podcast, as well as the Geekscape Book Club here under the Geekscape umbrella, is here to join me and talk Aquaman. I hope your festivities went well if you're celebrating your holidays. This is the last day of 2023, so we're going to say goodbye to 2023. I guess we're also saying goodbye to the DC Entertainment Universe as it currently is. Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom was the last movie. Who'd have thought that? Was it supposed to come out before Flash? And then it ended up not coming out. Whatever. We'll talk about it with Christian. I hope Christian has all the ducks in a row on that stuff, because at one point this movie had like five different endings or something like that. So we're going to talk all about it coming up. Again, there are going to be spoilers. If for some reason you're like, hey, I went to check out this Geekscape podcast, I thought it was interviews. We definitely have some awesome interviews on the feed. The feed's been kind of, I think it's been awesome, but it's been it's got a bit of a personality, multiple personality issue right now, because we came back from LA Comic Con with a ton of panels that I put up on the feed. We did have a couple interviews. We had our Christmas charity fundraiser, the holiday fundraiser. There's that episode on there on the feed. And then, of course, we have a couple specials like The Marvels or Loki Season 2. And then this one right here talking Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. So it's been a bit schizophrenic on the feed. For me, I love that stuff. Anybody who does podcasting is like, Jonathan, you're insane. It's all about consistency. And people want to know what to expect when they get Geekscape. Well, you can expect some geek pop culture talk, and there's going to be more. I mean, we have What If Season 2 just ended, and that was like my daily, every morning, if I had insomnia at like 3 a.m., I would be ready for a brand new What If Season 2 episode. And it was really awesome to see a daily episode pop up and be able to enjoy it while everybody else is asleep. And we got tons of pop culture to talk. I went to see The Boy and the Heron, the new Miyazaki film, and it's beautiful and weird, and you knew it would be, and it leaves you so much space to think about the things that it's bringing you. And some of it's challenging, a bit of a movie about grief and time, and I don't know, I'm still thinking about it. I love it, and I think about the accessibility of the film and how literal it is, and maybe not literal, but if you've seen the Miyazaki Boy and the Heron film, and you have to because he's a master, and who knows how many more films we're going to get from him, his movies are just incredible, but this is definitely one where he leaves a lot open to interpretation and leaves, again, a lot of space for you to think about the movie, and I love that. I thought it was so awesome. This movie we're about to talk about, though, Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, maybe it serves up to you kind of literally. You know, it definitely wants you to see the movie they intended you to see, and maybe discuss it a little bit afterwards, which is what we're going to be doing here. So you are in the right place. I think Instagram's working. apologies for any hiccups that might have caused, but let's get to it. It's been 2+ weeks since I've done a live Geekscape, and I cannot wait. Here's my good friend Patrick Wilson to welcome you to a brand new Geekscape.
I'm Patrick Wilson. You're watching Geekscape.
All right, Geekscapists, let's get down to the nitty gritty of talking Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. Again, we're going to be spoiling it pretty heavily. So if you've not seen Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, I'm first going to ask you, why have you not seen this? Why have they not done enough for you? They brought you 10 or so years of DC Entertainment Universe content over there at Warner Brothers, and why have you not seen this film, please? What were you watching? You looking for some award season stuff? Is that what you're doing, you snob? All right. Maybe the family didn't want to go see it. They wanted to see Wonka. Well, you should have been like, no. Put like a line in the sand. We are not watching Wonka this holiday season. We are watching Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. Like me and my nephew when we went. That is what we did. Okay, that's enough of that. I got Christian Blatt here to help me talk about this. we're gonna cut this one up like a fish.
Thanks for having me on, Jonathan. And my first question is, are they spoilers if there's nothing really to spoil?
That's a good... Wait, I mean, things do happen in this movie.
But like Flash was like, I don't know what, like 2 hours and 5 minutes. And it was like 80 minutes of spoilers, you know, and it was really hard to talk about Flash. You can get into whether or not the film was good or not. But there were so many things like, I can't talk about that. Can't talk about that. This is like, OK, well, you're going to spoil the story, but there's nothing. There's no ripples in the ocean after this. This doesn't set anything up. And, you know, every Marvel movie sets up something. Most of the DC movies have set up something, but they don't have anything to set up. So there's not spoilers in that way. But you're right. We would be spoiling plot. And I don't even think there's any reveals in here.
They didn't really add. They didn't really add to the sandbox much of the DC Entertainment Universe. They were basically like, all right, we're going to put this movie out. Hopefully y'all all enjoy it. We're going to follow the same DNA we did with the first one, where it's going to be bonkers. There's going to be some real wild stuff in here. You know, like the first one, I remember like the seahorses and like the manta ray weapons and all this crazy stuff where I was like, you know what? Whether or not you think this movie is good, you ain't seen this before. And I remember watching the first Aquaman. I liked it. I actually had a blast watching that first Aquaman. Went to see it by myself, sat in the theater being like, whatever you are, bring on the bonkers. And it delivered the bonkers in spades. And I loved it. I thought it was so much fun watching that Aquaman movie. Was I going to watch it again? No, I have yet to. But I really enjoyed sitting in the theater, and just for the only time I was going to see that movie, in the insanity that it put on screen, that's what it delivered. And I enjoyed that. The second one, I was hoping for the same. And I think the problem was that it, in a lot of ways, it was the same. That the bonkers were neither escalated or built upon. And I'll say, I mean, this is just a serviceable movie that has Aquaman teaming up with his brother, Patrick Wilson, Ocean Master, and finding out the secret, you know, trying to stop Black Manta from releasing the Lost Kingdom of these banished old, this kingdom of people who got turned evil, turned into aqua zombies that have been frozen in ice. And now the Black Trident that has possessed Black Manta is going to free them, and the world will not be safe. And meanwhile, there's this very bludgeon over the head over. Kind of you don't want to mute, buddy?
Oh, sorry. I actually, I thought I was still on mute this whole time because there's a gardener outside my next door neighbor. I wanted to share. Look, here's the thing. That's what I wanted everybody to hear. They want to know, hey, what do you think about Aquaman? Sorry. Which means that I unmuted. So you heard all the leaf blower next door.
The leaf blower. As the movie is, the villain of the movie is like, hey, in order to unfreeze this lost zombie space, like Aqua Kingdom, to destroy the Earth, it's all about the greenhouse gases and global warming. We got to stop the greenhouse gases and global warming. And Black Manta has created this machine to put greenhouse gases in the atmosphere and warm the Earth to like unmelt the Aqua zombies. Like, this is literally the plot of a $300 million movie or so. Black Manta's plan almost worked. I mean, Christian was choking on smog.
None of us could breathe because of, I also saw this movie 2 weeks ago. I don't even remember the name of that substance that they were burning, and I should.
It was like Mysterium Impossibilium, or like one of these.
Yeah, you know, does it matter?
Chemicals.
Yeah, does it matter what MacGuffin X or whatever that substance was called? It actually doesn't, but it's interesting because you texted me about it, and I said, it's like, yeah, it's just kind of there. This movie, it's not bad. It was definitely not great. It's like, it's not even one of those like, oh, I can get worked up because I didn't like it. I mean, no. it wasn't that at all. And it was.
This is a very inoffensive movie. This is like, if you're gonna take your nephew as I did. I took my nephew's, what, 10?
Yeah.
I took my nephew to see it. We got a big-ass bucket of popcorn. We kicked our feet up. Not on the seats. Don't be rude.
No.
Don't be an animal. But we, metaphorically, we kicked our feet up. And we just loved hanging out and seeing this bonkers little movie. And I think that's okay.
Yeah. No, sometimes that's what you want. And I agree with you on the first one. The first one was a lot of fun. And obviously, why does the character work, this interpretation of him? It's because of Jason Momoa. It's not the super friends Aquaman that I grew up with, which was always like, all right, I guess. I guess he's one of, they're not Earth's Mightiest Heroes. Those are the Avengers. But, I'm supposed to believe that, he's right up there with Superman and Wonder Woman. I'm like, all right. But I liked, from the time we met him, I liked the Jason Momoa version of this. And I thought it was an interesting take. I think he inhabited it really well. The world they built around him in the first one, I agree with you. It's a lot of like, all right, that's a little, some of it's a little iffy, but you're like, I'm having fun. So who cares? I don't go to these movies to try and be like, what are the problems going to be? It was easy to have a fun ride with the first one. And at times, the second one has that as well. I think it's mostly fun, the second one. But as you said, inoffensive.
Yeah, and he has a kid now. He has a baby. And there's a scene where the baby starts using his psychic fish-like controller. And I loved that scene where he's talking to his father. The baby is in the baby, like, little, I don't have a kid. What do they call the little baby things? Just sitting in like a little stroller thing, and next to
Baby Bjorn
next to, in the living room, next to the fish tank. And suddenly the father looks over and the fish are doing circles and the baby is sending the little psychic rings from Aquaman, from super friends into this fish tank and making the fish do things. And I'm like, this is fun. I dig that. I thought the baby was going to help save the day at the end when the Lost Kingdom has risen from the depths and been unfrozen and is now going to wage war on everyone. And I thought the baby was going to be a bit of a last minute savior. That being said, I love Patrick Wilson. Patrick Wilson is ironically what Aquaman looks like from The Amazing Friends. Like, Patrick Wilson would make an incredible traditional Aquaman. He's fun as Ocean Master. I'm a big Patrick Wilson fan, not just because he did the "Hi, you're watching Geekscape" intro for this episode. I just like Patrick Wilson, and I like him in this. There were things from the first movie that I'd forgotten that when I saw again here made me feel good. I'm talking about Dolph Lundgren.
For me, it was Tamara Morrison as his dad.
Of course.
Like, oh, right. Boba Fett's his dad. I just forgot. literally forgot.
And he's good in everything.
Agreed.
I love him in everything.
When he's handed questionable scripts, he's still good in it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's good. And so seeing kind of Patrick Wilson's character, who is the bad guy in the first one, gets thrown into like a desert prison where you can't touch water in this one. And I think the rescue, my favorite part of this movie was probably the prison rescue where Aquaman and an octopus or squid, who is my favorite character in the movie. There is a sentient squid who like can go like cloak itself because squids can change their colors. They're like chameleons. They can change themselves, adapt themselves to whatever the color of the rock and fauna is around them. And so you've got this squid sneaking into this desert prison, pulling levers and stuff with Aquaman. And of course, squids can also squeeze themselves into like things the size of a dime, like holes the size of a dime. So you got this squid going through rocks and stuff. And he's doing smart ass stuff. And he's squirting ink or water at Aquaman to tell him, you know, I don't like you, or to protest a decision. And that was my favorite character. Would I watch a spinoff of the Aquaman movie? Only I would watch a HBO Max. You know, you guys want to
like
make your.
You're talking like a Topo standalone special, yeah. Or do you want a Topo series? Because a special, well, I'm all in. Like, where
I'm in. I'm all in.
I want 45 minutes of Topo. Yeah.
His name was Topo, and I want a Topo special.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want a Topo series, but
no,
I want a Topo special. The squid guy was my favorite character of the movie. Absolutely.
In a just world, he would have been submitted for Oscar's consideration, you know, but I just don't think that octopus actors are getting recognized just yet.
You know who else was surprising in this movie? And I didn't know he was in it until he came on screen. Randall Park.
Yeah. Shout out to Randall Park for this brief moment in time occupying the MCU and the DCEU.
Yeah, Randall Park is in this movie as a scientist who's begrudgingly helping Black Manta find the secret. He wants to see Atlantis. He sees Atlantis pretty early on in the movie. He does.
But he keeps helping.
But he keeps helping Black Manta with his diabolical plan. Including at the end. Okay, so here's something that had to happen at the end. To free the Lost Kingdom, that these zombies, these aqua zombies, to free them and finish the spell, in the same way that, like, Odin is, like, he who has the courage or the whatever of Thor can wield Mjolnir. They've been locked away, and the only way to free the Lost Kingdom is to have somebody from the bloodline, Aquaman's bloodline, like their blood hit this stone and then it'll free everybody. And obviously Black Manta wants to kidnap the baby to do this. They take two of these submersible ships that look like they're out of a Miyazaki movie. Like, you know, they look like they're from Castle in the Sky. These like submersibles, these ancient submersibles, Black Manta and Randall Park in a separate one, takes these submersibles down there to finally enact this spell and free the Lost Kingdom in this evil demon king from the ice. And all they got to do is like cut the baby and put the baby's spell, or sacrifice the baby and put the blood in there. I still don't know why Randall Park isn't just taking his submersible and being like, peace, especially because when you cut to Randall Park's submersible, he's the one with the baby. And Black Manta could just go fuck all and just be like, you know what I mean? Like, he's like, dude, Black Manta, why did you give me the baby? You've been punching me, throwing me against the wall, demanding that I help you with this, you know, this pollution science.
Yeah.
You've been treating me like crap for my scientific mind. There's several parts of the movie where he puts his hands up and helps Aquaman and Ocean Master, like, destroy some of the machinery that he helped build. Yet, when he has the chance and he has the baby to himself in a submersible, he doesn't say, you know what, I don't think, I'm going to go to Atlantis and hand the baby back over.
Yeah.
He takes the baby exactly where it needs to be.
I'm pretty sure I can get Aquaman's attention if I need to and, you know, keep the baby safe. Yeah. He
took the baby right where it needed to be to enact
the potential of baby murdering was not off the table for Randall Park. He's like, yeah, I saw Atlantis. Kind of want to see it again. You know, is that okay? Can I go back? But
I
found it interesting when the trailer for this movie came out that Black Manta, you know, the sort of the voiceover is, I'm going to hurt him the way he hurt me. I'm going to hurt his family. And he goes through everything.
Like, his father, or let him, yeah, you know, in right. the first one, he didn't save his father. He didn't kill his father. He didn't save his father.
Right. So Black Manta in this movie is the Jason Momoa character from the last Fast and Furious movie. Basically, he's like, he's seeking the exact same kind of revenge. And I was like, all right, I guess. And, I was very outspoken when the first one came in. The one thing that didn't work for me is that stupid Black Manta helmet. And I know that's comic book accurate, but it's so big.
I'm like, it's awesome.
Okay, but it doesn't seem practical. Like, you know, aren't you going to fall over? Why don't you just wear like a Cerebro-sized helmet, a helmet-sized helmet, you know, a Boba Fett-sized helmet? Tamara Morrison's got one. He can loan it to you. I mean, you can steal it from him.
Christian, have you seen these ads on like they're like the ads you'd get on like a Facebook or an Instagram, and it's a weight ring that goes around your temples and it's to strengthen your neck. And you have, you know, they always have, why do they always have goatees and they look like they're into like axe throwing clubs? You know, they have one of these dudes in the ad and he has this weight around his temples, goes around his head. He looks like Picard when he turned into a Borg.
Oh,
if you see these ads, Geekscape, you know what I'm talking about.
Elocutus of neck weights.
He looks like Elocutus. And he's got, it's this weight that goes around the temples, looks like fucking Elocutus. It's got a cable that comes down to it. I don't, you know, it's like a counterweight, I guess, so you just don't break your neck. And it's got this dude who totally looks like he worships IPA in axe throwing. And he's just sitting there going, yeah, this is the last thing I needed in my workout. He's just like moving his neck around to strengthen his neck.
As if the problem with his neck isn't like his Amish beard that, you know, goes down to his.
I think the problem with his neck is that it's almost non-existent. that's what you need if you're going to be Black Manta. Also, you know, say what you will about the unwieldiness of the Black Manta's helmet. It's usually worn underwater. There's some buoyancy.
You know what? I'll give you that. All right. Maybe it's helpful. I do want to interject something that I just noticed in the chat because I feel like it's relevant.
yes, Raging Rhino is killing it in the chat.
The most recent comment is in the comics, Black Manta murders Aquaman's baby. Well, whether or not that was ever in the draft for this film, I want to thank whoever made sure that that's not what they filmed. Because it's a lot of like sacrificing. Like, if it's just blood, like, can you just like, you know, cut the baby on the hand. I mean, that's also, it's abhorrent to cut a child. I'm not saying that, but it's better. Yeah. A little pinprick, you know, I mean, the way it worked where he just, you know, tosses like Arthur's face down there. Thank you. I feel like I can guess what era of comic books that happened. If Black Manta murdered Aquaman's baby.
Yeah. There should have been a scene where he holds his hand in a bunch of piranhas as well. and then Arthur Curry has a hook now. Because, I mean, that is...
I would have liked that, yeah. Hook Aquaman,
Is that not the era we're talking about?
The 85 miniseries Aquaman? Eric Larson. Is that what we're talking about? Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a little later. Eric Larson. Okay, I know the one you're talking about, yeah.
One thing Raging Rhino definitely says that I think is great. I think Shazam and Aquaman sequels took the same course. Do the same thing again with a few little changes and just have fun. It does work for fans of the characters. And I don't think I was as put off by the Shazam sequel as a lot of people were. I actually enjoyed the Shazam sequel. I thought the ending was some bonkers stuff, some fun, little kids riding around on a unicorn shooting rainbows and stuff. I was like, let's do it, whatever. I think the danger in a lot of these superhero movies is them taking themselves way too seriously.
Yeah.
And here we have something that doesn't take itself as seriously. I think the Aquaman movies have fun. Again, we talked about Topo, the squid character in this movie that I think was just fun, silly stuff. And now we can talk about a bit of the DCEU in that there's tone shifts in a lot of it. And I'm not saying that a shared universe can't be dynamic. I'm not saying that you can't have commentary in your stuff. I'm not saying that everything has to be dour, but I saw Man of the Steel twice in the theater. I thought it was really impressive on a scale level. I thought it was cool to see Superman done with his powers done properly on screen. I thought it was a really awesome character wise. There were worries coming out of that movie that Superman was morally ambiguous, and how was he going to be the defining superhero for this universe going forward, where that all the other characters are shaded from? Was he too dour? And you started to see that issue come up when you started adding other characters to it and being like, well, you guys created a morally ambiguous Superman, so what do you expect? This is, it became a little too amorphous, right? And now every character from it had to go even harder, right? Like Aquaman had to be even tougher, right? Batman had to be even grittier or more. I already said the word dour, but that is the word for Batman, yeah, for sure.
Absolutely, sure.
And so these characters all started to share a similar tone. And so it made the movies, I don't know, things got a little bit messy in that what was the personality of these characters? What were the personalities of the overall universe? And how do you sell that? Does that make sense? And then when you start to have production issues come up and they start swapping release dates, as I think this movie was supposed to come out before Flash. I think This movie had post credits that included a Ben Affleck Batman, then a Batman 89 Batman.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton, yeah.
And then the post credit that we ended up getting, which, wow. This post credit, literally in Geekscape, I'll just give it to you here. There's a joke halfway through the movie about eating cockroaches as Ocean Master is learning more about surface world foods. So the post credit is literally Ocean Master, now that he's been forgiven, he's turned hero. I like that beat where he saves Dolph Lundgren's character. Again, big Patrick Wilson fan, big Dolph Lundgren fan. I like those two characters. He's sitting at like a seaside restaurant eating a sandwich or a hamburger or something, and he's enjoying a hamburger. He doesn't eat surface food. So now he's like eating surface food and enjoying it. And a cockroach crawls across the table, and he grabs the cockroach, puts it in the hamburger, eats it, and then smiles. And that's the final frame of film on the DC Entertainment Universe or the Snyderverse. Whoa. Okay.
I did not have that on my DCEU bingo card, by the way. I don't know if you did, but I was looking for it and I just didn't have it. So,
and here we are. Wow. Is this the end of the DCEU?
Well, I mean, James Gunn's sort of, it's mixed because he's throwing out some of it, but he's keeping, interestingly, all the stuff he did. Like Peacemaker going forward is going to exist. So he's
not responsible for Waller, but he used Waller for sure.
Yeah, that's true. That's a great point. Waller series,
yeah.
So anything that appeared in the Justice League, the Suicide Squad and Peacemaker, he's like, yeah, that stuff.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, I've got a little bit of Vegas throat. Out in the desert for a few days. But I think that you know, it's like the Snyder Justice League, I think, is the thing to look at and go, yeah, none of them. You know, I don't think we'll see any of them ever again. And you know, it's you know, I was glad that Gal Gadot had the cameo in Shazam. That was one of the high points in that. But it's sad to think that Wonder Woman 84 is like the last movie that she's going to get as Wonder Woman, you know.
Yeah, I mean, these characters are getting recast. We have Sean Gunn, former Geekscape guest and friend Sean Gunn, cast as Maxwell Lord now, right? So that Pedro Pascal Max Lord is not going to be, obviously Max Lord is not going to be an 84 anymore. He's going to be a modern character probably because he's going to be in the new Superman movie. You saw that casting, I think at LA Comic Con or nearby. But Raging Rhino, I think, shares our viewpoint. I was very sad that was the final DCEU scene. I think that the DCEU, regardless of what people thought about it, because obviously everybody's comparing it to, you know, the esteemed competition across the street at Marvel. Guys, I loved Blue Beetle. And I think Blue Beetle will possibly move forward as a character in another film. Or you see that window of the DC Entertainment Universe in a different film later down the road, because I think everybody really enjoyed Blue Beetle. It just was commercially, I think, a victim of things like the strike, you know. Maybe some of the positioning and the release schedule affected Blue Beetle. But I think those are characters you see going forward. I think a character like Shazam, you did see him in an end tag with some of the Peacemaker characters as being, you know, as being recruited into the Justice Society or whatever group that Amanda right. Waller is putting together. You did see a Shazam tag with the Waller characters. How quickly that stuff gets dismissed, who knows? I mean, I'm very optimistic for the new stuff coming out. I think that if anybody is going to do a great job with them, it's somebody who loves the DC characters. James Gunn is a DC fan, more so than a Marvel fan. He's publicly said that a lot. And you saw what wonderful things he did with the Marvel characters. And you saw what wonderful things he's done with the DC characters. And he's somebody who has a literacy and an appreciation for how expansive these characters are in the DC universe. He knows the DC universe. That is his, that is what he loves. And he grew up enjoying. And I'm really excited for how he takes on all of them. And I think he will treat all of them like he did Peacemaker, where you take a D-level character and now this character is a star, right? And people are asking about Peacemaker. I had a friend yesterday send me a picture. His kid was playing with a toy. And this is a Marvel character, but he said, "Hey, my kid has this toy. What character is this?" It was the Spot.
Oh.
and the Spot, I mean, you will agree, the Spot is a D-list character on the comics page. He is there for punchlines. And what they did with this character in Across the Spider-Verse is turn this character into almost an Omega level character, right? Like, the treatment of these characters is the defining, I think the defining judgment on these characters is how are they treated by these creators? Because any character can be like a Spot on the comics page, treated as a footnote or as a joke. Given in the right hands of the Across the Spider-Verse team, the Spot becomes an A-list villain with like Omega level powers, right? Given Peacemaker, who is, you know, cameos and some stuff, it's kind of fun. You give them to somebody like James Gunn, who really loves the character, appreciates it, and knows the character, and somebody like Judo Master, somebody like Peacemaker, somebody like King Shark, suddenly becomes like a really well done character, you know? I'm excited.
Also from the Suicide Squad, what is it? Polka Dot Man? Was that his superhero name? It's just a great collection. And I mean, obviously some of them slightly more established, but it is the Guardians of the Galaxy playbook, you know, a bunch of characters that existed in the Marvel universe, the comic book universe, but people didn't really put them together. You know, when I sat down to see that, I knew who Rocket Raccoon was and there was a bunch of other people. And I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. But I think that the smart thing is that they're not looking at whatever the new DC universe is as a whole. I mean, I'm sure there's lots of conversations and email chains and text threads. They're like, yeah, I'm focused on Superman Legacy, period. And it's like, and then the year after,
Superman Legacy has like a ton of characters in it. They cast Metamorpho, which is awesome. It will be having, you know, the Authority supposedly is showing up in the Superman Legacy. The Superman Legacy does not seem like it's going to be Smallville into Metropolis, traditional Superman movie. This is going to be a celebration in an entryway to more obscure characters in the DC universe. And we've seen Gunn fold these characters in, even including like the classic Guardians of the Galaxy from the 70s and the 80s. And Guardians of the Galaxy is a pretty top-selling book in the 70s for Marvel. And a lot of people are like, what are these obscure characters? Like, Yondu's the only one I know. But in the 70s, Guardians of the Galaxy was a really... I mean, when you had Star Wars in the megaplexes, Guardians of the Galaxy was one of the equivalents over at Marvel, and that is a top-selling book going into the early 80s until the Claremont Burn X-Men stuff starts coming out and topping the charts. The Avengers was not a top-selling book towards the end of the 70s. That is a book that needed a resuscitation. And Guardians of the Galaxy was a really top book over there, along with Micronauts. And we're talking 78, 79, where people are really looking for the Star Wars stuff. and Gunn takes those characters and re-celebrates them and reintroduces them and casts them, Sylvester Stallone as them. It's kind of like one of the points. Who is Sylvester Stallone going to play in the new DC Entertainment Universe? Because that's one of his tools. Raging Rhino says, I still say that the final scene should have been a follow-up to the Flash end credit scene. Barry tries to reset the timeline again despite Arthur's protests. An instant later, Momoa becomes Lobo. Oh, great casting. We've always wanted Momoa's Lobo. Great casting. And then Bucket of Chum podcast over on Instagram, my first Instagram comment, says, I think Gunn has said Blue Beetle is the first movie in his universe, but Superman will be is for the first that his studio produces. I don't know.
No, but the point though is that there's not at least announced plans of like, and we're gonna, you know, here's our, you know, our third or fourth Batman in the last decade, you know, for his universe. Here's a new Wonder Woman. It's all like, yeah, we're gonna do this Superman movie, and I'm sure they know all the chess moves, you know, years down the board. But you know, when you Marvel does the same thing, it's like they're gonna let you know the next 5 years worth of movies, but it's like. And then on April 24th, it's untitled DC Project 8. You know,
and you leave room for pivots, right? Like clearly, yeah, Marvel is going to be doing some pivoting going into the next two big Avengers movies because of the fallout from Jonathan Majors' conviction and this and that. Was it a conviction? It was.
I believe one of them is a conviction, I believe.
So that's a terrible situation.
Yes.
And Marvel has to pivot with that stuff. And so we're going to have some shifts to our. Big two Avengers movies that were already on the slate. And we've seen those shifts. We've seen a director fall out. We've seen new screenwriters hired. Who knows? But Raging Rhino says, let's see. Oh, Jim Pugger, as far as the Blue Beetle, I had not heard that Blue Beetle is going for. The only thing I know about Blue Beetle is they clearly were going to go for a trilogy if that movie succeeded.
Yeah.
Whether or not those remnants become... And, you know, it has a great tag with the Ted Kord stuff. And that stuff is ripe for going forward. It features no other DC characters. We could, in retrospect, look back and see that it was the first James Gunn DCEU movie. Because you can just pick it up and drop it in any continuity. Because it is so standalone as a Blue Beetle movie. While still referencing some DC movies, DC characters. I'm down with that idea. For sure, because I love that cast. I love the filmmakers. I think it would be awesome to have them back.
Think of it as a restaurant with a soft opening. You know, it's just sort of like, yeah, look, this is what it is. And I agree, that movie was a lot of fun. And it didn't get bogged down in like, well, is this the old timeline? Are we setting up the new timeline? I don't know. Just watch Blue Beetle and he's going to hang out with George Lopez. And what could go wrong there, you know?
And George said, like, he'd, you know, I gave a lot of George Lopez stories and the Angel Gracia story. There's an Angel Gracia interview back in early December, late November on the feed. And we had a bunch of George Lopez stories, but talking to George, he was like, yeah, we're supposed to do more with that stuff. And who knows, like there's a strike and that resets a lot of stuff. There's a shift at the studio that changed a lot of stuff. But I know that a lot of people had so much goodwill on Blue Beetle. And Raging Rhino says, I believe that Blue Beetle is going to remain in the Gunniverse. Is that what we're calling it?
Okay, Gunniverse. We'll call it that. Perfect.
But doubt he'd get another standalone film. Yeah, let's put him on a team with some people. Let's have him team up with some stuff. Let's have Ted Kord come back and do some Booster Gold. Well, obviously, we were getting some Booster Gold content, we've heard. Jim Pugnarelli says, do we know which characters from the Authority we are getting? Is it the Wildstorm, Jenny Sparks, OG lineup? Who knows? And some of that stuff was pretty adult, right? We had a violent team. We had a gay relationship for the first time in like a major comics line. Remember how big that stuff was in the 90s? We're like, oh my God, the Superman and Batman character on the Authority are lovers. And people were like, what? Remember that in the mid 90s? And it's like, okay, let's put it on screen. Because I think it would get a similar response at the box office. Right, we have not seen a superhero relationship like that in a superhero movie at the Cineplex yet, have we? A major studio superhero movie with a Batman Superman type character.
No, and I think anytime you get stuff like that in movies, it's always set up in a way so that it can easily be edited out for China and the Middle East and things like that. I'm casting a wide net, but it's very clear sometimes that they're like, yeah, they're just friends as far as the script mm-hmm. of the movie's concerned, because you know, and I mean, I can't think of a good example of, you know, I mean, obviously you get crazy stuff on streaming, like The Boys obviously shows right. what people are willing to watch on a streaming service. But yeah, I mean, putting billions of dollars into, you know, making and marketing a feature film, you probably still have people that are hesitant, you know, it's studio, you know, big money people who are like, yeah, but maybe save that for the sequel. But I think, I don't know, I think it's worth trying, you know?
Yeah, to have the Apollo and Midnighter relationship on screen. I mean, we've gotten away from Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. I think we've said what we want to say about it, is that it's fun, inoffensive, and definitely a movie that you would watch with your family over the holidays and kind of just be like, cool, let's see some bonkers stuff on screen. You know how it's going to go.
You'll enjoy it when it's on HBO Max in time for Easter. You know, that's probably when it'll be there, you know.
But the big celebration of everything that came before and really closing the chapter. No, there are parts that feel a little bit like a fizzle, but I think what I'm arguing here, or I'm going to argue it now, is we need to stop as fans thinking about these things in the way that maybe corporations do, where they say, okay, this is that chapter, this is that regime, these were the decisions made under that stewardship. And as fans, I think it's healthier for just us to think about this as the genre that it is, and say that this, almost like that ending in Flash that I enjoyed, the Crisis stuff, and say, hey, this is a flowing river that many artists have put their names in their stamps on. And just like in comics, you have these eras like the Byrne and you know, Avengers run that turned, you know, the Byrne Claremont X-Men run that was then had the Silvestri come in and replace John Byrne. And then you know, that moved on. And then the Jim Lee X-Men took over and was the dominant X-Men book. And it, that just moves on. And I think you just think about this stuff as, hey, we can see these characters come back, you know, at any time. Who ever thought that we were going to see Michael Keaton in a bat suit again until The Flash? Who ever thought we were going to see that stuff? Who ever thought we were going to see some of those weird cameos of made and unmade DC movies that we got in that Crisis sequence?
Yeah, I mean, Nicolas Cage showing up is the craziest thing of the year, I think. Seeing Nicolas Cage crazy. In that suit, I was like, all right, they really went for it.
But you loved it, and obviously there's a Loki season 2 episode a few back, but Marvel is the same. You can see anything is in the rules book, right? And like, I'll just spoil now how much I loved What If season 2. I thought it was great because it was a celebration of all the different possibilities that can be given to you, audiences, with these characters, right? And I think that should be the approach every time we sit down in the seats, is this optimistic, let's see what these artists do. And I know there's a corporate presence here. You cannot miss that. But let's see what these filmmakers, these storytellers, these artists do with these combinations. And let's hope for the James Gunn stuff. Let's hope for a James Gunn treatment like they did The Guardians, where there were not a lot of expectations for that movie. And people were like, is this going to be Marvel's first misstep? No, it was a spectacular success. And I think you hope for that stuff. And ideally, worst case scenario, you end up with a movie where you're like, hey, I got to spend 2 hours with some characters I really liked. I got to see a version of them by people who took a swing at bat. And okay, cool. On to the next. Let's just keep enjoying this stuff.
Yeah, I think that feeling, you're right. You know, the What If sandbox lends itself to that. But the idea that you could sit down and you actually don't know what you're going to get. You know, a good example would be to talk about Shazam again for a second, that Wonder Woman's actually in the movie. I just assumed like, okay, but they don't really do that. And, you know, again, it was a promo for the movie, but then you see Brie Larson at the end of the last episode of Ms. Marvel, the TV series, you would just think, well, they're not going to put her on TV.
And she's a movie star.
Right, right. Exactly. So it's like, so when you can get those surprises, don't do them for the sake of like, well, here's our wacky M. Night Shyamalan ending. But when you can be legitimately surprised in a way that helps the story, I think it's great. I think that potential. And I think that James Gunn probably has like everything on the table. Every, you know, there's so many different ways he can go. And I think him telling a Superman story, I think will, you know, just be, you know, I agree with what you said about Zack Snyder. I didn't want it to sound like I'm discounting that movie. I like that it was a different vision for Superman. It's not the Superman that I feel closest to in my heart. You know, that's the Richard Donner Superman. But
of course, but it was pretty awesome seeing Zack Snyder's Superman on screen.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, him snapping Zod's neck, I know that bothered people. I'm like, no, that moment lets you know this guy's going to do what he has to, you know? But
and Superman did snap Zod's neck in the pocket universe in the bomb, in the burn book.
Right.
So sorry, fans.
Sorry, it happened before. So, but at the same time, I don't want to see Aquaman's baby killed, you know? So there's a way to do it where it works. And I think James Gunn is the right person to have in the chair. I just to circle back to Aquaman for a moment, and it was one of the things that I noticed from the trailer was that when you saw the trailer to the movie, you would have thought Nicole Kidman was Aquaman's wife because he talks about his family, and it's you see her a lot. You never saw Amber Heard. Seeing her in the movie, I felt like, okay, yeah, I know there's some weird stuff out there or whatever, but I was like, yeah, the character still works. They didn't do much with her. And I had the same feeling seeing Ezra Miller in The Flash. I'm like, yeah, there's some crazy stuff about them. But at the same time, it didn't take me out of the movie. Did you feel that even for a second about Amber Heard? Because I didn't. But I'm wondering.
There's Mira.
I'm wondering if you think people might have, or maybe just there wasn't enough buzz about this movie for people to even thought about it.
It's tough when you see that something, and again, it goes back to what I'm saying about looking at this thing as not as different eras or different, you know, regimes treating these, like, if you look at these things like chapters, then I think that's a problem. I think you see these characters as characters that have existed for decades on the page and now they're existing in film and they will be inhabited by other actors one day. We are going to get a Wolverine played by someone other than Hugh Jackman one day. We are going to get a non-Chris Evans Captain America one day, Steve Rogers one day. And people have to know that and see that these characters will outlive us and be ready for things to be different. They are all part of the same storyline. They are all part of this multiverse stuff. And I'm glad there's such a heavy multiverse storyline going on in every, including Sony, like every single superhero studio right now, because it's really the way to view this stuff as any of this stuff's in play at any time. Any take that you didn't enjoy can come back. I'm still rooting for my Eric Bana Hulk to show up and start, you know, be chased by Hulk dogs into the next multiverse. because we wanted these movies to exist when we were 12. And one day we will be gone, but there will still be other 12-year-olds. And to not wish these things for them is the most cynical, dour, selfish viewpoint you can have. So I'm not saying who cares, but I'm saying, like, don't care about that aspect of it. And seeing Mira on the screen played by someone who's been in the headlines, it's like, yeah, I have to separate that from what's going on in the world. And okay, there's Mira. Okay. The Ezra Miller stuff is awful. The Jonathan Majors stuff is awful. But none of them are permanent. Yeah, right. The characters are permanent. What they mean to people are permanent. I saw a kid with a Sonic the Hedgehog doll. Mom was bouncing in front of their face. That Sonic's permanent. Jaleel White, not permanent. Roger Craig Smith does Sonic as well. Like, not permanent. Sonic's permanent, right? What these things mean to people is permanent, right? I'm sitting here as a 45-year-old man talking about this stuff. And they've meant something to me my entire life. And I think that that is where we put the onus, not in who treated this stuff successfully or not for my one individualistic view that has to be anything. I mean, I feel uncomfortable even talking about this stuff as a filmmaker and being like, oh, this is what I would do better. Like, who gives a crap what I would do better? No. Did you enjoy it? And did my nephew enjoy it? Yeah, we have fun.
Like I said, it's always important, you know, whether we do it over on Marvel Movie Talk or we do it on my podcast, I always want to try to start, especially when I know somebody has let me know that they didn't like something. I'm always like, okay, well, let's start about what you did like.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes you can actually get a lot of conversation about the things that work, and maybe, you know, something that bothers somebody doesn't overpower in the movie, especially like when you hate the movie's ending. Sometimes you can carry with you that ending.
And then these movies don't have endings, folks. These movies don't have endings.
Right.
Spoiler, these movies don't have endings.
Wow. It did have an ending for that cockroach that made it.
The cockroach we're not going to see again. But I'd be a fool if I thought that we weren't going to see any of these characters again one day. In some, even in a glimpse.
I think we'll see every single Justice League character within the next decade. You know?
That's bold. Maybe not the Flash.
I'm not Ezra Miller playing the Flash, and maybe not Barry Allen.
Oh, the characters?
Yeah, the characters.
I think we might see a Momoa cameo again in the future. I don't even care. Yeah. Like, who? If I did a Lobo movie right now, and Lobo was the bastard she's supposed to be, and he's having fun and he's playing loose like Deadpool does, would I have him reference the same actor who played Aquaman? Would I have him reference Aquaman in some throwaway place and maybe see a glimpse of it? Yeah, who cares?
Look, this movie even had a moment when Ocean Master and Aquaman are in the desert. Aquaman calls him Loki. I'm like, okay, good. I'm glad we're acknowledging what we're getting here in this moment.
Yeah.
You know? I thought it was, and it's very funny though. You know, I'm like, okay, be a little self-aware. You know, don't treat your audience like they're stupid. And I mean, look, it's a fun movie. I think people aren't talking about it because of when it was released. But I don't think that this is necessarily superhero fatigue. It was just like, oh yeah, Aquaman, I saw one of those.
Yeah.
And your casual moviegoer was like, maybe they did want to see Wonka, but you know, I don't quite know what it is, but there was something else that they were probably more excited about, you know.
Raging Rhino says, Christian prefers the Christopher Reeve Superman. I prefer the Henry Cavill Superman. I love Henry Cavill Superman. I love Christopher Reeve's Superman. We should just be happy we have both. And I'll tell you what, when I saw Brandon Routh as Superman, I thought he was great as Superman as well. It all comes down to the material. And I'm optimistic about the rest of it. Christian, my buddy, you had a good holiday.
Yeah.
You came back with a Vegas cough.
Yeah, a little bit. And I didn't know that quite the extent of it until we sat down to start talking. So my apologies for that.
No problem. Buddy, it was Black Manta trying to release the Lost Kingdom.
Yeah, well, he didn't like that I made fun of his helmet. You know, he's like, oh, I'll show you.
Shoots one of those red blasts.
The holidays were great. We took the kids up to Santa's Village up in Lake Arrowhead, spent time with the in-laws, and then a week in Vegas with 4 days in Vegas with the kids. So getting ready for 2024. And, you know, when we were texting, I was saying to you, I'm not sure which one I'm happier to turn the page on, 2023 or the DCEU. I think 2023 is the thing I'm happier to say goodbye to.
It was hard, man.
Yeah. DCEU gave us some moments, you know, some very fun moments, some really surprising stuff, some good stuff. And I, as a unabashed Marvel fan, I wanted DC to succeed as well. You know, I think there's plenty of room for both to have great film franchises, and it helps the other if the other one's doing well, you know?
Agreed. And 2023, I was thinking today, I handed in a pretty intense outline last week. I was like, oh yeah. And last week last year, this time I was prepping a table read for a film that we had I was like, I'm making this movie this year, and then strike and all this stuff.
Oh yeah.
Woo, boy, did we get walloped. We got walloped. Yeah. I mean, I had a table read on the 3rd, or I think on the 3rd of January, 2023. Oh, wow. And I was like, I'm so stoked to make my movie. To be continued.
Yeah. Somewhere from the pre-production on your movie, you have a Polaroid of Nicolas Cage in one of his costumes for your film. And that's all you have right now. But there's still the future. Maybe we will get Nicolas Cage's Kal-El one day. Who knows?
We got our asses kicked in 2023, but here's some 2024. And maybe we do go make that movie. Who knows? Chris, or I was going to say, Nick, you still down? Geekscape us. Love you so much. Please, like, follow what we say here at Geekscape. Don't hate. Just take that energy, create, and share your stories with us. And be part of Geekscape. We, you know, I think so. A lot of people popped in on Instagram throughout this, so I'll try it a little bit more. Send me an email, jonathan@geekscape.net. Let me know if you thought it was cool to see us on Instagram. Maybe send a DM if you're already on Instagram. Tell me it's cool that you saw it. I don't think I'm going to archive them on Instagram. They're all archived on our Geekscape for TV YouTube page and on our Facebook pages. Go to Geekscape on Facebook. Go to the Geekscape Forever group on Facebook. Hang out with the rest of us, and you can listen to Christian on all of his podcasts and socials. What are those?
Well, you can find me at ChristianDMZ. That's Instagram and Twitter. And coming up in the next month over on Geekscape, we're going to do a Marvel Movie Talk special on What If, a Marvel Movie Talk special on Echo. Remember, all five episodes are dropping at once. And for the first time ever, Disney sent out sort of a press reminder, like, hey, just letting everybody know you're going to get screeners of Echo before it launches, because it might get lost in the shuffle. And I was like, okay, so you're sending us an email that you're going to send us an email. So I thought that was interesting. It'll be interesting to see. But big news in the Geekscape universe on, let's see, January 19th. For at noon Eastern, 3 Pacific, we're doing a special Geekscape book club where I'm going to speak with JMT Matias about Kraven's Last Hunt. And I've been trying to line that up forever since I started doing Geekscape book club. And he found time, and I appreciate it. I'm very excited to talk to him about. We're not going to only talk about that, but that's the entry point of the conversation.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Christian, that is a get. That is a huge get.
Yeah,
holy shit. Wow. I love it. And thank you so much for putting the little Geekscape banner on it. And that is the kind of content that, oh my God, I cannot wait to hear it. That is so beautiful. Geekscape, it sounds like 2024 is already going to start rocking for us. We can't wait to see you in it. Thank you so much. Share this with your friends, subscribe, and keep spreading the positivity in the geekdom of it all. We'll be here in a couple days. I think we're going to be talking What If Season 2. Which I'll just tell you right now, I enjoyed the hell out of it. So we'll see you there. Okay? Thank you for being in the comments. Thank you for everything. Peace.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.